You're listening to Business Stories with Ryan Arcaracci, where I speak to business professionals from all walks of life. Thanks for listening, and let's get to it.
Welcome back, everybody. It's a new episode, a new day. I'm excited about this one. I'm talking to Mr. Ian Stanley. Ian is really involved with helping you and all of us learn how to write better email copy and also get out of that 9-to-5 grind by creating a passive income. And there's a lot of strategy with that. There's a lot of ideas and there's a lot of methods to that. And Ian is the guy to get you out of that grind mode, work less, but actually make more money. So Ian, thank you for being here. I hope I hit the nail on the head with that.
Yeah, more or less. I think the only differentiation I would make is that, you know, what I teach, I call it almost passive income, because I think truly passive income is basically if you're already super rich, people will pay you to be rich and they'll, right, you know, use your money to make more money. Whereas for most people, almost passive income, something that takes an hour or two a day, is a much more realistic thing for people to achieve.
I agree with you 100%. Now, you have an interesting background, Ian, because you started as a kid stringing tennis rackets. Tell us a little bit about what that was all about.
Yeah. Wow. That's going way back. That's when I was like 12 years old.
Yeah.
So I played tennis from the time I was 3 until I was 23 or so, and played in college and a little pro, and I hated it my whole life. But really? I started stringing rackets when I was 12 years old, because I just liked having my own money. And right, so even back then I was getting paid like $25 a racket. And I got to the point where I could do them in about 20 minutes, realistically to an hour. So I was getting like $50 an hour as a 12-year-old. Now that was not, you know, full-time work. There was a couple of, you know, 2-to-5 rackets a week maybe. But I did that for a few years. And, you know, I think it was my first taste of what it was like to not work for anybody and to have my own freedom with money. And so it's, you know, it's interesting, those little moments early on in your life, how much they imprint on what you end up doing and, you know, what you end up liking.
Right. At that young of an age, were you in the mindset of sort of being an entrepreneur? Did you actually sit down and look and make them do the math and go, look, I need to do this many rackets to make this much money. This is how much money I want to make. I have to hit a goal. Were you in that mindset at that point?
I wasn't like concerned with how much I was going to make. I was just going to take on any person who wanted me to string their rackets. Right. So it's not like there was an endless amount where I was going to start hiring other people or anything like that. I just knew a couple $100, even in, you know, in a month as a 12-year-old,
yeah,
is a rather significant amount of money. It's not like I had any bills to pay or expenses or anything going on. So I definitely, my mom, I think, was more of the entrepreneurial mind, and she kind of, you know, she helped me make business cards and all that. So I was sort of supported in that. But in college, I was either, I always knew I was either going to work for myself or for the government. So I was going to go into the military and do that. And so two very different ways of living, but I'm not very good at being told what to do. So that might've been a challenge. Yeah. But right, I just sort of always knew like it's one or the other. So.
Right. Right.
I was just saying, having a normal job was never something that was particularly interesting to me.
Yeah. And I want to talk about that, because I think there's a lot of people who are maybe at a job listening. They're content, you know, but if they could work 2 hours a week, make just as much money, or if not more, I want to talk about how that is possible with your program. What is the strategy? I know there's a lot that's involved with selling products. You sold a lot of products. You're really good with email copy. So talk to us about this passive or almost passive income program strategy.
Yeah. I mean, I think for most people probably listening, especially if you have a job, you've seen all the, I don't know if I can swear on here or say douchebags at least, sure, but you know, all the douchebags on YouTube.
Yeah.
Doing all these, you know, whether it's drop shipping or the next crypto thing or some wild way of making money that's largely based in bullshit. And, you know, I've met a lot of these guys and I know that they don't give a shit if anybody succeeds. And so,
right,
I used to teach really more how to like build your own email list, sell products and do all that. But the reality is most people won't succeed. You know, it's a certain type of person who's already got experience and stuff. So the first way I made money when I just got out of college, and even in college, I got paid to write emails for other people. And then after college, I tried to start my own products and sell my own stuff. And I made like $1,000 and then ended up getting hired to write emails for a guy's company. And basically from there, that was my first like $5,000 month when I was, you know, I was also coaching tennis on the side, which was great cash flow.
Yeah,
I make like $70 an hour as a, you know, 23-year-old kid. But I knew that all of the tennis pros there were also making the same amount as me, and they were never going to make more. And it was this glass ceiling. And for me, it was really just, I hated trading time for money. And I knew that if I wasn't on the tennis court, I wasn't going to get paid. You know, if housewife number three had too much vodka the night before, she doesn't show up, I don't make money. And so I started writing copy, and I was getting paid $20 an hour at that point, but I knew it was worth doing something for $20 an hour, even though I could make 70 an hour coaching tennis, because I was building a skill.
Right.
And so that ended up turning into writing for that company and another company. And then I started on my own companies, and email has been the foundation of all of that. And so a few years ago, I started a program just teaching people literally that simple thing is find companies to write emails for and then get paid to write emails. And a total beginner can charge $50 an email. If it takes you 20, 30 minutes to write an email, that's $100 an hour, you know, and for a lot of people, there's not a lot of people who make that hourly.
Right.
It's not every hour, and you can't write 8 hours a day or anything, but, you know, I find that it's obviously I'm biased. It's my own with what I teach and everything, but it's literally the simplest way to just make money online. You don't have to own anything. The other business owners, the ones taking all the risk, they're the ones with employees, they're the ones running ads, they're the ones spending, you know, taking all the risk, and then you just get paid to come in and make them more money, and they're happy to pay you because, you know, they're making more money from every email you send than what they're paying you.
So I got to ask you this, because this is sort of my challenge, right? I'm always trying to write. I think we all are. We're all trying to write better sales copy. We don't know whether we want to be serious or we want to be kind of fun and have fun with it and be funny. So how do you start shaping an email to be good? I mean, what are the things you look at if you're going to pick apart a lot of, I mean, I'm sure you've seen your share of general emails going out, and I'm sure most of them completely suck to you. So
they do.
What are you seeing that's the problem, and how do they change it?
Yeah. So, I mean, so I'm a comedian. I do stand up. I just released my first special. Like I'm very actively writing funny things, at least what I think is funny, and at least a good amount of other people. And so lots of people say, oh, you know, sales copy shouldn't be funny. That's, you know, that's stupid. It's not professional. Especially an email. I think it's one of the most important things you can do. Even if you can have one single line, a little metaphor, a little analogy that makes people do what I call the nose breath laugh.
Yep.
Like most people aren't going to laugh out loud or belly laugh at the written word. It's typically going to be a movie, a show, or stand up. But if you can get people to do that little nose breath laugh, that little, like, you know, that little tiny chuckle when they're reading, you've separated yourself from 99% of the emails they're reading out there that are just promotional garbage. And you're building a deeper relationship, and people will open your emails just for that little nose breath laugh and then keep opening and ending up buying and all that. And so to me, really the biggest mistake people make is writing what I call corporate mayo, which is just, you know, that boring corporate mayonnaise, very jargony type of shit. And so many people, they'll be like, oh, I'm in B2B, it's different. And I'm like, well, is it a person who runs that business? Is it a person who's over there? Like, it's still humans.
Right.
And I don't know anybody who I've ever met who's like, you know what I love? I love a boring email with a bunch of corporate jargon that makes me, you know, hey, just circling back, just touching base, just wanted to, you know, mental reminder. Hey, I hope this email finds you well. It's like, no, absolutely not. The most important thing is that your opening line is something that's at least some level of curiosity driven to get people to keep reading.
Right.
And really writing more story-based emails that correlate back to whatever it is that you have to sell. And really what's changed dramatically over the past little bit of time is AI. And I was very firmly anti-AI as a person who's been writing for over a decade and who writes very personality-driven copy that's really, you know, informal and sort of playful and fun. I tried out ChatGPT and I just, it was garbage, right? It's really just that corporate man. It feels like a lawyer sat down and just tried to make you fall asleep.
Right.
With the words. And so, you know, I think that is one of the biggest changes that's happened, though, is I ended up actually having a customer of mine who built an AI tool based on my voice and all of my teachings in email. And then, and I actually ignored it for a couple months. I'm like, dude, I don't like AI. I don't want to try it out. And then I finally played with it and I was like, holy shit, this is like better than most people. It sounds like if AI actually had a soul.
Right.
And so for me, it's like not everybody. I use it to come up with hooks and ideas and certain lines of my emails, but I'm still a writer and I like to write, but it's become kind of the main thing that we sell in the business now because it's so valuable to people, especially like your everyday business owner who doesn't want to become a world-class copywriter, who doesn't want to spend, you know, years trying to get really good at that, or who also just doesn't have, you know, 5 hours a week they want to spend writing daily emails or even their weekly emails. So that's been a big, you know, sort of game changer, is just seeing. This is the first AI tool I've seen, at least, that writes like a person and has, you know, jokes in it, and it's funny and it's interesting and it's more playful. But I'd say that's the biggest mistake people make, is if you're bored by the email you wrote, everybody else is going to be too. You know, writing is just a transfer of feelings and right. selling. And so if you're writing from a place of boredom or just this like sort of stiff, boring way of writing, people are going to feel that way and they're not going to want to keep reading. You know, and right. it's at 99% of businesses suck at email, which is also why it's such a good place to go and get paid, because people go, well, emails suck and I don't want to read them. It's like, exactly. That's why it's such a good opportunity, because there's probably 1 to 3 people who every time they send you an email, you open it, or at least most of theirs. And so your goal is to become that person or that company. And when you do that, it's crazy. It's just like having an ATM machine that you can, you know, you send an email and people send you money.
So I want to ask you a challenging question, because there's a lot of boring businesses out there. It's hard to make HVAC exciting, right? Or, I don't know, selling shoes or painting, right? Like, good businesses, lucrative, you know, recession-free, but boring in some cases, right? Would you agree? So like, give me an example, Ian, where, you know, you take a situation like that or a story you have where you've used this, and kind of what's your take on it? How do you approach it when it's really difficult?
Yeah. So it's actually, it's funny that you asked about that specific thing. I've got a student in my 90 Days to Freedom program who he makes like 15 grand a month just writing emails for HVAC, garage door companies, like, you know, quote unquote, boring businesses like that, because, right. you know, it is boring. And so all they're going to send out is, hey, is your garage door need fixing, or
right.
You know, whatever it might be. And so he only, and for them, you only have to write like one email a week. But I think, well, actually, so this is kind of funny. If you want me to, I can share at least a couple paragraphs. Yeah. I happen to have it. I was totally wondering if I could find it. I actually had the AI tool write an email for a garage door company. And I know nothing about garage doors other than I have one.
Right.
And it opens and it closes. Yeah. And so I would just wrote, I said, basically write me an email about a garage door company. And this is what it wrote, which is pretty shocking. So the subject line was, whisper quiet and it changed my life. I said, you wouldn't believe it, but installing a new garage door opener can be a transcendental experience. Like the moment you first slip into a hot bath after a day in the cold rain, it's an unexpected slice of heaven. Just last week, I finally replaced my old grumbling garage door opener. It was the kind of machine that announced my comings and goings with the subtlety of a freight train. I thought it was normal, just the way things were, but oh, how wrong I was. The new opener glides with such silence, I had to check twice to make sure it was actually working. It's not just about the absence of noise, though. It embodies efficiency meets serenity. Here's the kicker. You never realize the cumulative stress from those daily grumbles and groans of old machinery until they're gone. I swear my dog is less jittery and I'm enjoying the calm I didn't know I needed. And so like, and it goes on for a few more paragraphs, but
that's great. I love it.
I mean, it made me want a new garage door. I didn't even know that was a
right.
I don't
right.
even think mine's loud, but now I'm like, wait.
Now you're thinking about it. Yeah.
I need a new garage door. So, I mean, that's just sort of a simple example of, and it's funny that you asked that. It probably seems planned to the people listening. I did not know you were going to ask me about a company of that nature.
It's not, I promise it was not planned at all. We're not in cahoots here. Yeah.
No. So it's just sort of, that's just sort of an example, right? Of taking something seemingly boring and telling a story. It could be about an actual person who installed their garage door and what it felt like after that happened, or just even using words like the moment you first slip into a hot bath after a day in the cold rain.
Right.
Just taking that little bit of language that's a little more interesting than, you know, it's nice when things are quiet.
Yeah.
It's like, it's just that little bit of, you know, writing that's got its own little bit of personality and comparisons and things like that. And that's one of the easiest ways to write better emails, is literally just to compare things that are boring to something that's not as boring.
It's really interesting. And I got to ask you too, do you feel like in your copy, there has to be some level of invoking emotion? Because I feel like that's a huge part of it too. It's a combination of charming, being charming, funny, but also pulling out that emotion. Do you feel like that's also a part of it?
It's a huge part of it. I literally had a whole chapter in my book about feelings in advance and about making people feel as much as possible. The more people feel, the more they buy. And it's the more wide a sort of range of feelings you can get them to feel, the more likely they are to buy. It's like, if you can make somebody laugh and make them cry, you're going to, that wide range of emotions, those seemingly very different types of feelings, are going to change people's state. And when they change their state, they're going to be more likely to buy. And really, you know, it's the whole old adage of people buy on emotion and they justify with logic.
Right.
So when it comes to your writing, anything that's going to make you feel stuff, and the more you can get them out of their logical mind and thinking in words and instead thinking and feeling in pictures and sort of ideas, right, everything's going to go better. Because people, you'll forget an interesting email that was, you know, had some value in it. But yep, when you tell stories or you have these things that actually invoke emotions, people remember those feelings. And right, especially with email, they'll keep reading your emails if they know that they're actually going to feel. So, I mean, literally most of human life is just people trying to feel stuff. That's why people go to concerts. It's why they go to comedy shows. It's why they go to movies. They go there to feel.
Right.
And if you can make people feel through the written word, they're going to feel like buying.
Yeah. And I don't think enough businesses really understand that. They're more logic based and they're more like, this is the product. This is what it does. This is why you need it. But that's only a surface level, right? So I feel like that's important. I got to ask you too, Ian, too, on subject lines, right? Like I'm always, when I'm typing a subject line, if it's a general email to one person, it's one thing. But if I'm sending out a campaign with a subject line, what's your thought on that? I mean, because that to me is one of the most powerful, that's the gate, right? That's the gatekeeper to get them in. So what's your thoughts on that?
Well, so you said something interesting, you know, if it's a campaign, it's one thing. And if it's a personal email to one person, it's something else. But I've actually found that some of the best emails you'll ever write and the best subject lines you'll write are literally the type of subject lines you would send to a friend. So, you know, hey, we still on for today? Like, yeah, you know, just stuff like that, that you would send, or, you know, check this out, right? Yeah. Like you may not send all this clever stuff inside of that, but some of those are the most powerful subject lines because it mimics, you know, email was designed as a two-way platform. It's like a walkie-talkie, not a radio, right? It was meant for people to communicate one-to-one. And so if you treat it like it's a radio and you're just broadcasting to a bunch of people, it feels less personal than if you treat it like a walkie-talkie and you're having one-on-one conversations just in a large scale. So, I mean, the subject line is sort of what I always say is your number one goal of email marketing is to make your subject line obsolete so that when people see your name in the inbox, they open no matter what the subject line says. But the reality is it's a catch-22 because you have to write good subject lines to build that relationship.
Right.
So, you know, curiosity is always going to be the best type of subject line. Nothing's ever going to beat a great curiosity-based subject line where you have to sort of open the email in order to get a solution.
Yeah.
Whatever that question was posed in the subject line doesn't mean the subject line's a question necessarily, but it gets them to ask a question, you know, in their mind, even something as simple as like, do this instead of eating breakfast.
Right.
Right. So you have to open to find out what this is and, you know, in what you should be doing in place of eating breakfast.
That is so good. It's so simple too. I love it.
Yeah, cheers. Yeah, it's just like simple set, you know, how-to emails can work really well to just, if there's a specific result people want, like if I send an email that just says how to get higher open rates or how to get better click-throughs, that's probably going to do at least reasonably well because there's a clear desire that people have. And if you hit that, you know, they're going to probably open it.
Right.
But that curiosity, and there is even, if you look at that, there's curiosity even laced within that underneath of, okay, well, what is the how-to?
Yeah.
What's he going to say?
Right. Right. So let's talk about this I want to talk about two things. I want to talk about almost passive income. I was looking at your website and there's phases to this. And one of those phases, it says three ways to create your own 1 hour workday. So talk to us about how do you structure this to work less, but actually make more and have more free time? What is the angle to this and how do people get involved in this sort of thing?
Yeah. So, I mean, the reality is there's, you know, thousands, if not more ways to create income and potentially even almost passive income. But I define almost passive income as basically anything that takes less than, you know, an hour or two a day or a week to create and maintain. So really what it's the concept is just basically focusing on what I call exponential income. So most people trade their time for money in some way. And in order to increase your output of income, you have to increase how many hours you work.
Right.
And so it's finding parts of the world where you don't have to work more to make more. And so two examples of that, and this is, again, my world is email. And so that's what I teach and what I believe in. If you have your own email list, like let's say, you know, if you've got 1,000 people on your email list and you make an average of $1 per month per email is sort of the industry standard, right? So let's say in January, you've got 1,000 people on your list and you write emails, you know, every day or every, you know, a few times a week, and you make $1,000 a month from those 1,000 people. Well, if the next month you have 10,000 people on that list and you write the same amount, let's say it's 2 hours a week, you're still only writing 2 hours a week, but now you're making 10,000 a month. And then if the next month you're at 20,000 people on your list, well, now you're writing for the same 2 hours a week, but now you're making 20,000 a month. So it's finding these little pockets of the world where basically you can put in a small fixed input of time and create a disproportional outcome of money. So like, as my list has continued to grow and grow, like I can, I mean, with the AI tool now, it's kind of crazy because people can literally write the daily email in like 2 minutes. They just go put a prompt into it and they're done. But let's say, you know, for me, it typically takes me about 10 minutes to write an email because I've been doing this forever. Let's say it's 20 minutes to write and send an email. If I'm extremely slow that day, I can literally, you know, I've done this for a lot of the last like 7 or 8 years of just traveling around the world. And when I'm traveling, I'll just write one email a day, or I'll write 5 emails on a Monday and have them all loaded up, and then I don't have to do anything, you know, and that can just continue to go out. So it's sort of the same thing. If you write for somebody else, let's say you're making $100 an email and they're paying you, you know, to write one a day, let's say it's 30 a month, yep. You know, you make $3,000 a month. Now, if you're making them significantly more than what they're paying you, and then you say, hey, let's do $200 an email. And they go, great. Well, we make 1,000 an email. So I'm happy to do that. Now you've still got that same little fixed input of, you know, 20 minutes a day to write the email, except now you're making twice as much. So it's finding that place where there's exponential outcomes. So you don't have to spend significantly more time writing more emails. And that's part of the path too. Like I was saying, you know, early on, you may get paid per email, or you may get paid per month, or you can get paid a percentage to write for other people's lists. So if you're getting 10% of the money that they make and they're making 10 grand a month and you can take them to 50 grand a month, now you're making 5,000 a month for the same amount of work.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's sort of the whole concept is just that little small fixed input of time where you can continue to grow the other pieces and you make more and more as that thing grows.
So how do you approach a business as a copywriter to sell your services? Are you saying, look, you can hire a marketing person full time to do this work, or pay me to do this work and it's going to save you time and energy and I'm going to get more done for you? I mean, how do you approach that with like a standard business, like an HVAC company or a painting company?
Yeah. So there's a couple of ways to do it. It depends kind of on the offer you want to make. One of the easiest ways, you know, to get paid early on is to just do a percentage of whatever the emails make, and it's a win-win, and they have really no risk, right? So you come in and write, and if you make no money, they don't pay you and they fire you. And if you make them 10 grand and they give you 10%, you get $1,000.
Right.
But not that many companies always have all the ducks in a row where they can track everything. So one of the simplest things, you know, you charge $1,000 a month, $3,000 a month, sort of depends on the list and the type of person. Like an HVAC company, if you get them, you know, one or two extra installs in a month,
yep,
that might be worth $5,000 or $10,000 or more. So to pay you $1,000 or $2,000 a month to write an email each week is a, you know, it's a very easy decision to make.
Right.
And so you can either start out by writing one or two emails for free to sort of demonstrate your value up front.
Yeah.
And that's something that a lot of people ask too, because now with the AI tool, it's kind of interesting because for business owners, it's easier to write their own stuff because they can literally go in and put in a one or two sentence prompt and it'll spit out their emails for them.
Right.
But what I find is a lot of business owners, they don't want to do it. It's the bandwidth. It's the mind. It's sort of the amount of mental energy it takes to do it. And also not knowing exactly what the best types of emails are and when to send them and stuff like that. So that's where it's, you know, even easier to, that's where it's still just super valuable for them, because you're taking this thing off of their plate that if they're not going to try and get really good at email, I mean, I'm yet to find a business that can't, you know, make more money from sending better emails. And so right. It's pretty universally a thing that you can help anybody with. I mean, I don't care if it's a, you know, your local dog groomer or a dentist office or a gym or a coffee shop or a bar, right. Like so many of them have customers and they have people on their list. And what you'll find for the most part is if you ask almost any business owner, do you think you could be making more money with email? They're like, yeah, definitely. And right. Say like, let me try it for you. And then, you know, if it works out, well, you'll pay me this or whatever deal you sort of want to set up. And so there's lots of ways to get in contact with them too, whether it's DMs or even, you know, cold email is as annoying as some people think that is. If you write something that's actually interesting, people will open it and they will respond. And so like our AI tool has an initial outreach thing that literally writes you custom emails for each person you want to talk to. And they're like funny. They've got puns in them. They're sort of, you know, because you got to get people's attention. If you're just like, hey, John, I noticed that you have an HVAC company. I write emails. I could make you more money. Let me know. Yeah. If you
right.
want me to, it's like, geez, just stop.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. So let's talk about the AI tool. I want to understand more of that product. So how does that work? Is that a subscription-based product? And then how exactly does it work for the business owner or for the copywriter?
Yeah. So basically it's a subscription. We have a free trial thing so that people can test it out. I feel like nowadays I would never even test a tool if there's not a trial, just because it could be absolute shit.
Right.
Then you've, you know, just wasted your money on it. So it's a subscription and basically it's got a broadcast builder. So any of your sort of daily or weekly emails, it'll write those. You put in basically some information about your product. It takes like a couple of minutes mm-hmm. and it uses that to populate those parts of the email. You can also do it without doing that, but it's a lot better when you do that because it's got sort of all the specifics to your business. And then we actually just added a tone selector because the main sort of thing people wanted was it sounded too much like me.
Right.
Not enough. Like, because it's basically been trained on thousands of my emails and all my courses and my methodologies and stuff. So
wow,
works, but it's also my voice largely. And so we added this tone component so you can shift that. And then also a place where you can upload, let's say, you know, for you, you take five of your best emails you've ever written and you upload them into this little section and then it learns your voice and then mm-hmm. it'll actually write in your tone.
Wow.
And so you can do broadcasts. You can, there's a story selling tool. So basically you could write one word, like I stubbed my toe this morning, and then it'll literally write a story about how you stubbed your toe and how they should buy your product because of that.
Wow.
And then there's like a copy coach. So literally you can put in any emails you write, it grades it like a, you know, A, B, C, D, and then tells you what you did well, what you didn't do well. And then it rewrites it. So it's kind of like if I was actually consulting for a person and reading their emails. And then we just added this sequence builder. So you can write like a full 10-day welcome email sequence, literally without writing a word. You just put in the, which one you want it to write and you've got your product in there. And you're like lead magnet or whatever they opted in for, and it'll literally write your full welcome sequence for you by just like clicking buttons. It's honestly pretty bizarre because I was, like I said, super anti AI.
Yeah.
So the fact that I've changed my tune.
And now you've got an AI twin of yourself.
Yeah, now there's a robot version of me
right.
that people are using right this minute to write this stuff. So That's all. And then there's the initial outreach thing. So basically it'll write your out. If you want to write emails for other people, it'll literally write the emails to send to a business owner. Not like most people will never do this, but I know for a fact that it works. Is you could literally just print out that email that it wrote, put it into an envelope, write the name of the business owner on front of it, and actually send them a piece of mail. And 100% of people would open that, because if somebody writes you a handwritten note, you know for a fact that you're going to at least open it.
Right.
And so for the, I'm quite lazy, but if you're even just a little bit less lazy and you're willing to do that, it's like, that's game over. Because so many people aren't. Just the fact that you're willing to do that separates you from, you know, just about everybody else. And I feel like direct mail has sort of made a big comeback because it's so not crowded now.
Right. I agree. Right.
Physical mail, you can, you know, you're talking about it costs you 50 cents or whatever. The businesses have, you know, if it's a local business or a small business, they have their address online. You send it to that person, and each client might be worth $1,000 to $5,000 a month. So it's like, it's obviously worth it to send them one piece of mail.
Wow. Yeah, that is great. So where do people find this tool? How can they get the free trial?
It's at emailgamechangers.com. You may have to put the www dot, because sometimes, despite the fact that I have an AI tool, I'm not good at the internet. And sometimes Sam Kirk decides not to let your website work unless you put the www. So it's just www.emailgamechangers.com.
Emailgamechangers.com. Okay.
And you can cancel whenever. There's not some scammy like rebill thing where we try to screw you over or anything like that. And if you don't like it, you let us know and we cancel it.
This is blowing me away. Like I really want to try this now.
Because, yeah, we can get you access. I'll give you a login for it.
Oh, I would love that. I'd really appreciate that. Yeah. If you're listening to this and you're listening to Ian, go get this tool, because I love this. Because I'm constantly every day trying to figure out how to write better copy. And one more thing I got to ask you before we wrap this up, Ian, too, is you're getting into like a stand-up comedy career too, which is a funny transition from marketing and email marketing into stand-up. Why that? And is that sort of a segue, or does that helping you with the email in your business and all that?
Yeah, I think, I would best classify doing stand-up as like a virus that you catch and you can't stop it. Like I write almost every day, at least some form of stand-up, because the world, you know, you're just going around the world and seeing it everywhere. And it's what I feel like I was put here on earth to do. So it's not something I can ignore. Yeah. And it's definitely, you know, becoming more of a legitimate thing that I'm actually, you know, making money from and building up. But the, you know, what's interesting is I'm in a very unique position where, you know, I make quite a bit of money from my business and I don't have to work a lot.
Yeah.
So obviously there's mental bandwidth and energy and time that goes into running the company, but you know, it's maybe a couple hours a day. And so I'm in a weird position where all these other comics who are trying to make it when they're early on, you know, they're happy to make 50 bucks from a show, or they're trying to like, they have to do all sorts of shit they don't want to do in order to try and make it. And ultimately, I think there are certain arenas in life where it's very valuable to have your back against the wall and have that sort of almost desperation that forces you to succeed. Right. But I feel like with something like stand-up, it's kind of like any art form, like, you don't want to have that feeling of desperation because people can tell. It make you less creative in ways. So it's been unique for me where, you know, I spent 30 grand on my special and was happy to do so because it's like Netflix quality, you know, filming production and stuff. And to be able to do that and to be able to travel around and do shows and not have to worry about money has definitely made life a lot easier. And that's, you have to have that drive though, like that. It's, I'm not doing it, you know, I know it'll make a lot of money at some point. But it's just like it's definitely helped all of my copy and everything. I mean, how I built my sort of email list originally, probably five, like 6-7 years ago, is I did these parody videos of, I had a character called Lai Topez and Barry Grinder Chuck and Kent Gardone, and I would do these parody videos of these famous entrepreneurs and they went viral, and people would then go, and I would buy these domain names. Like I bought thelaitopez.com and Very Grind, Ask Very G and Kent Gardone. And so I'd buy these silly domain names and people would actually go there and then opt in to get onto my real email list and find out that I was actually a good marketer and buy stuff.
Yeah.
But so I think for me, comedy's definitely played a role, and it's part of why people like my emails as much as they do. It's, you know, I'm not going to run a business. It's not fun for me to run.
Right.
So for me, it definitely helps, but
yeah,
you know, not everybody wants to make people laugh in their emails.
So are you kind of like, and I know like with Jerry Seinfeld, for example, when he started out, he literally had a notebook everywhere he went. And when something funny came to mind, he would just write and write and write. So are you kind of that mindset where you just kind of carry something with you, and when an idea pops in your head, you're writing it down right away?
Thankfully, I've got an iPhone that has a notes folder. Yeah. So I have probably, let's see, I could even open it. I have 1,700 notes.
Wow.
Probably about 1,400 of which are comedy. So any little moment that pops up, I'm going to write down at least that. I think that's actually one of the big, it's the same with email actually. So there's, I can give a little correlation lesson here, is like, they say nothing, I think nothing bad happens to comedians because the worse a story is in the moment, the better it tends to be on stage.
Right.
Same with email, is like nothing bad happens to an email copywriter because it's just a good story. You know, it's
right.
Something to write about, but like you'll have weird ideas. Like I had this, I found out that the first chair was made in the 1600s,
mm-hmm.
you know? And so I'm like, that's insane to me that people took that long to be like, yo, we should probably sit down.
We should sit. It's been 100 years.
I thought about like, if you can lean back, it feels fucking incredible. And so I'll write that down and then I just sort of work through it. But I actually just recently saw a clip of Seinfeld talking about how every minute of his life is just looking for material.
Right.
I'd say I'm not quite, there's a point where you can miss the moment if you're, you know, if you're seeing people as just opportunities for material. But I think actually one of my biggest advantages is that I don't hang out with as many comedians as most comedians.
Right.
So I just have these people who will say very funny things that then spur an idea. Like I had a bit in my special about how we should have a presidential combine where presidents have to run a 40-yard dash, have to bench, and they, you know, and if they can't do that, they're not qualified. And it was some random guy at a bar in Nashville who was like, man, we should have a presidential combine. And so I hear that one little sentence and I go, okay, I can make that into a whole bit now.
Right.
And so
that's funny.
You write it down, you forget.
So where can people watch your special? Is it on YouTube? Is it on Netflix? Or
I think by the time this is out, it was on moment.co, which is a pay-per-view platform, and it's off of there in a couple of days, but it will be released on YouTube in a couple of months. So I my YouTube channel, I post a video every week. I've got a brand new one for all my comedy stuff. So it's just, if you look up Ian Stanley Comedy on YouTube, you should hopefully be able to find it. So there's some clips and stuff on there. And then I post all my stuff on my Instagram at Becoming Ian Stanley.
I'm a huge comedy fan too. Do you have any favorite comedians that you kind of looked up to?
Yeah, I'm a big Ricky Gervais fan. I mean, I'm half English and half American, so everybody thinks I'm Australian, but I'm a big Ricky Gervais fan. I think his style is very impressive. Same with Louis C.K. Sort of, I like more offensive stuff, and I'm impressed by people's ability to take things that they shouldn't talk about and then make them very funny. So I love them. I love Shane Gillis, Tom Segura, Bert Kreischer, Joe Rogan. I'd say even like Nate Bargatze, he's a clean comic.
Yeah.
Who's hilarious. I'm not.
Yeah.
It'd be cool to be able to, but he's super impressive. Jim Jeffries is definitely a big one for me.
Yeah. Jimmy Carr. Do you like Jimmy Carr as well?
You know, I like him.
Yeah.
I think he's a funny guy. I think he writes some really good jokes. My style's more storytelling and sort of, you know, longer form. He's really very much a joke guy.
Yeah.
I think he writes some very good jokes. And I actually heard Seinfeld was on Comedians and Cars getting coffee with Zach Galifianakis. And they said, do you think somebody could make it as a comic if they weren't like poor?
Yeah.
And they're both like, no, you gotta be poor and you gotta want it. And I'm like, no, I don't think that's true. And I think Jimmy Carr was actually already a successful business owner or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
He got into comedy, so I think that's quite interesting.
Yeah.
But those are basically the only two. Ricky Gervais and Jimmy Carr are the only two English comics who have made it in America.
Yeah, I love Ricky Gervais. I think he's so smart. And I love that he pushes the boundaries a lot to the point where I can't believe it. I'm like, how did he really say that? You know?
Oh yeah. So, I was in Norway this last year, and we went and saw him at this theater in the front row, and it was masterful. And it also, like, I had some bits I wasn't going to put in my special. I'm like, ah, it's too far. And then I went, nope. If it's funny, it's funny. It doesn't matter how offensive people think it is or you think it is. If you can tell it in the right way, and that's what's so impressive about him, is the ability to take something that you absolutely think you can't talk about and then actually make it funny. I think that's the point of stand-up, is to take things that aren't funny and make them funny, because otherwise the world's just a dark place where if you can't laugh about something horrible, then, you know, if you can laugh about it, you take away its power of being such a negative force.
Right. I think that, I don't think people understand that, especially with like the sort of like, I don't know, I hate to say woke culture, but I think there's people have lost the ability to let go and just have fun because they're too busy trying to, you know, point the blame. And I feel like that's kind of hurt. I mean, it could have helped comedy, but it could also hurt comedy, I guess. But I think it also carries weight with comedy. I think you can push things even further because of that situation, right?
Yeah, I think it's really been an interesting few years, because I moved to LA in 2019 to go and take comedy seriously. And then COVID happened. And that was also the height of sort of, you know, for lack of a better, woke culture and cancel culture, really. Right. To the point where, first off, there weren't comedy shows because the world was shutting down and everybody was offended by everything. And so there was a little point there, and that's where I actually doubled down on my business at that point, because I was like, okay, well, you know, stand-up might not exist, which is crazy to say now, because I think it's almost the biggest it's ever been, right. You know, partially because of Joe Rogan and the reach of that podcast and, you know, his group of people. But I think it's made comedy funnier again in ways, because the world is so absurd right now. Like, if I made a joke about how there's a kid in a classroom who identifies as a cat, 5 to 10 years ago, people like, this is too absurd, this isn't funny. And then it's like, well, I could tell that story now, and it's actually a true story.
Right.
This real thing teachers are dealing with is having parent-teacher conferences as to whether or not they should put litter boxes in the bathrooms for the children who identify as cats. And you go, that's not funny 10 years ago because it's so absurd. But now it's like, well, yeah. And if you think that's okay, then, you know, don't watch my stand-up. If you think kids should be able to identify as cats, that's where I draw the line.
Yeah, and that's not a litter box you want to clean up, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, also kind of genius from the kids, though, if you do think about it, because like, if they were like, hey, what's the answer to this math question? And I was like, meow. You'd be like, go to the principal's office now. They're like, dude, I don't want to do math. I'm just going to pretend I'm a cat.
Right. Like, man, I should have thought of that when I was 12.
Genius.
I know. Why did I think of that? Anyway. Well, Ian, this has been a great conversation. I've learned a lot. I'm excited to try out your tool. I'm excited to test out my new writing skills after talking to you. So thank you so much. If people have questions or they want to check out the comedy, they want to check out your writing or find out more about your program, what's the best way for them to reach you?
Yeah, you can go to just emailgamechangers.com if you want to check out the AI tool. And then if you want to just get on my general email list, if you go to almostpassiveincome.com, there's an opt-in page there, and you can kind of see how I write and what I write about and all that stuff. And then so the YouTube channel is a big focus. If you're more of a comedy fan, check out the Ian Stanley Comedy Channel. That's where I'm putting a lot of energy and effort into making some really good stuff. So,
awesome. Well, thank you, Ian. It's been a great conversation. I wish you the best of luck, even though I don't think you need it. Let's keep in touch and keep this conversation going down the road. Okay.
Yeah, man. I appreciate it. You got me started talking about comedy. I can go all day on this. So I had a good time, man.
Hey, this is Ryan. Are you in the market for a customer relationship management system for your business? Well, before you drop a dime, pick up my book, Customer Relationship Management Exposed, now available on Amazon. Just search Customer Relationship Management Exposed in my name, RyanArcoraci. This is your definitive guide to saving money before purchasing a CRM, so pick it up today.